Hello. Hello, howdy. Guten Abend, or Guten Tag, Guten Morgen. Bonjour. I hope you're fine. This is me, Morel. Stories for Kids with Morel Podcast. Stories for Kids with Morel Podcast, welcoming you to the second and final part of the story, Book of Beast. I shall ring the story bell. And again. And my dear trusted friend is here with me. Birdie, say hello. Hello. Zippity-doo-da, zippity-dee. My, oh my. What a wonderful day. I hope it is a wonderful day where you are. It is a fine day where I am in the UK. And so, get comfortable, please, and so that we can continue with the story, the final part of Dear Little King Lionel. Open the book, and I think the last words were, the dragon came out and said, "Perhaps, my lord," said the Prime Minister, "we'd better find out just exactly what he has done." Then Lionel, in floods of tears, said, "It's a red dragon, and it's gone flying away to the hills, and I am so sorry, and oh, do forgive me." But the Prime Minister and the Chancellor had other things to think about rather than forgiving Lionel. They hurried off to consult the police and see what could be done. Everybody did what they could. They sat on committees and stood on guard and lay in wait for the dragon. But he stayed up in the hills, and there was nothing more to be done. The faithful nurse, meanwhile, did not neglect her duty. Perhaps she did more than anyone else, for she slapped the king and put him to bed without his tea. And when it got dark, she would not give him a candle to read by. "You are a naughty little king," she said, "and nobody will love you." Next day, the dragon was still quiet, though the more poetic of Lionel's subjects could see the redness of the dragon shining through the green trees quite plainly. So Lionel put on his crown and sat on his throne and said he wanted to make some laws. And I need hardly say that though the Prime Minister and the Chancellor and the nurse might have the very poorest opinion of Lionel's private judgment and might even slap him and send him to bed, the minute he got on his throne and set his crown on his head, he became infallible, which means that everything he said was right and that he couldn't possibly make a mistake. So when he said, "There is to be a law forbidding people to open books in schools or elsewhere," he had the support of at least half of his subjects, and the other half, the grown-up half, pretended to think he was quite right. Then he made a law that everyone should always have enough to eat, and this pleased everyone except the ones who had always had too much. And when several other nice new laws were made and written down, he went home and made mud houses, and was very happy. And he said to his nurse, "People will love me now. I've made such a lot of pretty new laws for them." But nurse said, "Don't count your chickens, my dear. You haven't seen the last of that dragon yet." Now, the next day was Saturday, and in the afternoon, the dragon suddenly swooped down upon the common in all his hideous redness and carried off the soccer players, umpires, goalpost, ball, and all. Then the people were very angry indeed, and they said, "We might as well be a republic after saving up all these years to get his crown and everything." And wise people shook their heads and foretold a decline in the national love of sport. And indeed, soccer was not at all popular for some time afterward. Lionel did his best to be a good king during the week, and the people were beginning to forgive him for letting the dragon out of the book. "After all," they said, "soccer is a dangerous game, and perhaps it is wise to discourage it." Popular opinion held that the soccer players, being tough and hard, had disagreed with the dragon so much that he had gone away to some place where they only play cat's cradle and games that do not make you hard and tough. All the same, Parliament met on the Saturday afternoon, a convenient time, for most of the members would be free to attend to consider the dragon. But unfortunately, the dragon, who had only been asleep, he woke up because it was Saturday, and he considered the Parliament, and afterwards there were not any members left. So they tried to make a new Parliament. But being a member of Parliament had somehow grown as unpopular as soccer playing, and no one would consent to be elected. So they had to do without a Parliament. When the next Saturday came around, everyone was a little nervous, but the Red Dragon was pretty quiet that day and only at an orphanage. Lionel was very, very unhappy. He felt that it was his disobedience that had brought this trouble on the Parliament and the orphanage and the soccer players, and he felt that it was his duty to try and do something. The question was, what? The bluebird that had come out of the book used to sing very nicely in the palace rose garden, and the butterfly was very tame and would perch on his shoulder when he walked among the tall lilies. Sir Lionel saw that all the creatures in the Book of Beasts could not be wicked like the dragon. And he thought, suppose I could get another beast out who would fight the dragon. So he took the Book of Beasts out into the rose garden and opened the page next to the one where the dragon had been, just a tiny bit, to see what the name was. He could only see Cora, C-O-R-A, but he felt the middle of the page swelling up thick with the great creature that was trying to come out. And it was only by putting the book down and sitting on it suddenly, very hard, that he managed to get it shut. Then he fastened the clasp with the rubies and turquoises in it and sent for the Chancellor, who had been ill since Saturday and so had not been eaten with the rest of Parliament. And he said, "What animal ends in Cora? C-O-R-A. The Chancellor answered, "The Manticora, of course. "What is he like?" asked the King. "He is the sworn foe of dragons," said the Chancellor. "He drinks their blood. He's yellow, with the body of a lion and the face of a man. I wish we had a few manticoras here now. But the last died hundreds of years ago, worse luck." Then the king ran and opened the book at the page that had Cora on it, and there was the picture, Manticora, all yellow, with a lion's body and a man's face, just as the chancellor had said. And under the picture was written, Manticora. In a few minutes, the Manticora came sleepily out of the book, rubbing its eyes with its hands and mewing piteously. It seemed very stupid. And when Lionel gave it a push and said, "Go along and fight the dragon, do," it put its tail between its legs and fairly ran away. It went and hid behind the town hall. And at night, when people were asleep, it went around and ate all the pussycats in the town. And it mewed more than ever. And on the Saturday morning, when people were a little timid about going out because the dragon had no regular hour for calling, the Manticora went up and down the streets and drank all the milk that was left in the cans at the doors for people's teas. And it ate the cans as well. And just when it had finished the very last little halfpenny worth, which was short measure because the milkman's nerves were quite upset, the red dragon came down the street looking for the Manticora. It edged off when it saw him coming, for it was not at all the dragon-fighting kind, and seeing no other door open, the poor hunted creature took refuge in the general post office, and there the dragon found it, trying to conceal itself among the 10 o'clock mail. The dragon fell on the Manticora at once, and the mail was no defence. The mewings were heard all over the town. All the kitties in the milk the Manticora had had seemed to have strengthened its mew wonderfully. Then there was a sad silence, and presently the people whose windows looked that way saw the dragon come walking down the steps of the general post office, spitting fire and smoke, together with tufts of Manticora fur and the fragments of the registered letters. Things were growing very serious. However popular the king might become during the week, the dragon was sure to do something on Saturday to upset the people's loyalty. The dragon was a perfect nuisance for the whole of Saturday, except during the hour of noon. And then he had to rest under a tree, or he would have been caught fire from the heat of the sun. You see, he was very hot to begin with. At last came a Saturday when the dragon actually walked into the royal nursery and carried off the king's own pet rocking horse. Then the king cried for 6 days, and on the seventh he was so tired that he had to stop. He heard the blue bird singing among the roses, and saw the butterfly fluttering among the lilies, and he said, "Nurse, wipe my face, please. I'm not going to cry anymore." Nurse washed his face and told him not to be a silly little king. "Crying," said she, "never did anyone any good yet." "I don't know," said the little king. "I seem to see better and to hear better now that I've cried for a week." "Now, nurse dear, I know I'm right, so kiss me in case I never come back," I must try to see if I can't save the people. Well, if you must, you must, said Nurse. But don't tear your clothes or get your feet wet. So off he went. The blue bird sang more sweetly than ever, and the butterflies shone more brightly as Lionel once more carried the Book of Beasts out into the rose garden and opened it very quickly so that he might not be afraid and change his mind. The book fell open wide, almost in the middle, and there was written at the bottom of the page, Hippogriff. And before Lionel had time to see what the picture was, there was a fluttering of great wings, and a stamping of hoofs, and a sweet, soft, friendly neighing. And there came out of the book a beautiful white horse with a long, long white mane and a long, long white tail. And he had great wings like swan's wings and the softest, kindest eyes in the world. And he stood there among the roses. The hippogriff rubbed its silky, soft, milky white nose against the little king's shoulder. And the little king thought, but for the wings, you are very like my poor dear lost rocking horse. And the bluebird's song was very loud and sweet. Then suddenly, the king saw coming through the sky the great straggling, sprawling, wicked shape of the red dragon. And he knew at once what he must do. He caught up the Book of Beast and jumped on the back of the gentle, beautiful hippogriff. And leaning down, he whispered in the sharp white ear, fly, dear hippogriff, fly your very fastest to the pebbly waste. And when the dragon saw them start, he turned and flew after them, with his great wings flapping like clouds at sunset, and the hippogriff's wide wings were snowy as clouds at moonrise. When the people in the town saw the dragon fly off after the hippogriff and the king, they all came out of their houses to look. And when they saw the two disappear, they made up their minds to the worst and began to think what they would wear for the court mourning. But the dragon could not catch the hippogriff. The red wings were bigger than the white ones, but they were not so strong. And so the white-winged horse flew away and away and away with the dragon pursuing, till he reached the very middle of the pebbly waste. Now, the pebbly waste is just like the parts of the seaside where there is no sand, all round, loose, shifting stones, and there is no grass there and no tree within 100 miles of it. Lionel jumped off the white horse's back in the very middle of the pebbly waste, and he hurriedly unclasped the Book of Beast and laid it open on the pebbles. Then he clattered among the pebbles on his haste to get back onto his white horse, and had just jumped on when up came the dragon. He was flying very feebly and looking around everywhere for a tree, for it was just on the stroke of 12. The sun was shining like a gold guinea in the blue sky, and there was not a tree for 100 miles. The white winged horse flew around and around the dragon as he writhed on the dry pebbles. He was getting very hot indeed. Parts of him even had begun to smoke. He knew that he must certainly catch fire in another minute unless he could get under a tree. He made a snatch with his red claws at the king and the hippogriff, but he was too feeble to reach them. And besides, he did not dare to overexert himself for fear he should get any hotter. It was then that he saw the Book of Beasts lying on the pebbles, open at the page with dragon written at the bottom. He looked and he hesitated, and he looked again, and then, with one last squirm of rage, the dragon wriggled himself back into the picture and sat down under the palm tree. And the page was a little singed as he went in. As soon as Lionel saw that the dragon had really been obliged to go and sit under his own palm tree, because it was the only tree there, he jumped off his horse and shut the book with a bang. "Oh, hurrah!" he cried. "Now we really have done." And he clasped the book very tightly with the turquoise and ruby clasp. "Oh, my precious hippogriff," he cried. "You are the bravest, dearest, most beautiful." "Hush," whispered the hippogriff modestly. "Don't you see that we are not alone?" And indeed, there was quite a crowd round them on the pebbly waste. The Prime Minister, and the Parliament, and the soccer players, and the orphanage, and the manticora, and the rocking horse, and indeed, everyone who had been eaten by the dragon. You see, it was impossible for the dragon to take them into the book with him. It was a tight fit, even for one dragon. So, of course, he had to leave them outside. They all got home somehow, and all lived happy every after. When the king asked the manticora where he would like to live, he begged to be allowed to go back into the book. "I do not care for public life," he said. Of course, he knew his way onto his own page, so there was no danger of his opening the book at the wrong page and letting out a dragon or anything. So he got back into his picture and has never come out since. That is why you will never see a manticora as long as you live, except in a picture book. And of course he left the kitties outside because there was no room for them in the book. And the milk cans too. Then the rocking horse begged to be allowed to go and live on the hippogriff's page of the book. "I should like," he said, "to live somewhere where dragons can't get at me." So the beautiful white-winged hippogriff showed him the way in. And there he stayed till the king had him taken out for his great, 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 great grandchildren to play with. As for the hippogriff, he accepted the position of the king's own rocking horse, a situation left vacant by the retirement of the wooden one. And the bluebird and the butterfly sing and flutter among the lilies and roses of the palace garden to this very day. Oh, what a lovely story. Love like a butterfly, soft and springy, and so am I. Butterfly. Hi, birdie. Wasn't that a lovely story? Yes, yes, yes. Okay. What you could do, you could write a summary of the story, or you could make a drawing. You could do it. So you could do a summary of the story. Yes. You could write, say, 200 words. Ah, 200 words. Yes, 200 words, a summary of the story. Or you could do a drawing of the wonderful, wonderful hippogriff. See what you can do. Okay, I will be back soon with another story. So, Stories for Kids with Moral Podcast. And by the way, tell others about Stories for Kids with Moral Podcast. I'll see you soon. Take care, everyone. Bye-bye for now. Bye. Bye.